The next afternoon, June 14, 7 days before the solstice, our train rolled into Denver. We hadn't eaten since the night before in the dining car, somewhere in Kansas. We hadn't taken a shower since Half-Blood Hill, and I was sure that was obvious.
Hello, and welcome to Floor 600, a podcast where two friends read the Percy Jackson and the Olympian series. We are your hosts,
Natalie
and Quinn. You can read or listen to the book along with us, or just enjoy this recap / amateur critique of the series by Rick Riordan. This is, or welcome now to episode 4, where we're reading chapter 15 through 18.
One of us is very sleep deprived.
Oh, what? Are you talking about me?
Yes.
You'll never know in this recording.
Anyway. Alright, let's dive into our recap of chapters 15 through 18 this week.
Yup.
Chapter 15, title is A God Buys Us Cheeseburgers.
I think we've once again reversed our scoring trends, because I was very generous this week, and I gave him 5 stars for this chapter title.
I gave him 3.
I'm sort of second-guessing it now, but that might be the sleep. But I thought it was hilarious when I read it. I was like, ha 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 ha. If I didn't know, because I have read this book before, I was like, oh, this would have been amazing. First time reading, like, a god, first of all. It's, like, basically our first time meeting a god outside of
Dionysus.
Who isn't very godly. So I was like, this could be exciting.
That's true. I guess if you're also super hungry, getting a cheeseburger is pretty exciting.
Yeah. Maybe I was hungry when I was reading it. I don't know.
So, at the beginning of this chapter, the squad arrives in Denver.
Yep.
Hot. Not much water. Dry. That's all I know about Denver.
I was thinking mountains. Skiing. Wait. Nearby. Not hot, but okay. Did you get Denver confused with a different place?
I was thinking Dallas.
Denver versus Dallas? That's a very big difference. Texas versus Colorado?
That's hilarious.
Oh, God. We're falling apart here. Okay, but yeah, they arrive in Denver, and it's hot, I guess, because it's summer.
That is so...
I don't know, Natalie, I don't know how to save you with the similarities. But when they get there, they realize that they want to call home, they want to phone home.
So, they have to find some water.
Yes. Which is hard, because they're in the middle of a desert. In a desert mountain.
Quinn, I was getting it together. So, the squad arrives in Denver, and they want to call Chiron. And I want to talk to Chiron about Percy's little chat with the water spirit. And see why they should go to Santa Monica. So, they have to find some water. And of course, Percy has no idea what's going on because he's not well versed in
the lore of the world that he's living in.
Yes. Because if you think about it, he's still only been, like, in this world for, like, 3 weeks.
I keep forgetting that because I feel like just because we've been taking a really long time to read through this.
Right.
So it seems like time has sort of slowed for them, and then you think about like the time that's actually elapsed in this book, and it's not much.
Yeah, because like I got to the end of chapter 18 and it was like, man, so much has happened in like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So, they have to iMessage Iris, who's the rainbow goddess. And mm-hmm. Annabeth explains that if she's not too busy, she might consider carrying a message for you. But they have to get a spray thing bottle to make a rainbow.
Yeah.
So they go to the car wash.
Mm-hmm.
So they pay with the golden drachmas and they get their message going. So it's basically just like a fancy FaceTime.
Yes.
Probably costs more than FaceTime does.
Probably. Gold drachma. So.
We never did figure out that conversion rate.
Let's ballpark $20.
Okay. So instead of reaching Chiron, they reach Luke, who's standing on the porch of the big house, and he's just like looking down over the valley real concernedly.
He is so suspicious in this moment.
I know. It's like, what are you doing? Like,
and I feel like if Annabeth wasn't so flustered around him, she would suspect him. Because yeah. It's not like, he's the only one at the big house. He's never the only, like, there's never only one person at the big house.
Right.
And then they say that, like, oh, there's, like, fights going on at the campers because someone has been spreading rumors. It's like, wink, wink.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, Chiron is down at the cabins because they're, quote, unquote, having issues with the campers. And it's like, well, what are you doing? You're
and
a counselor.
And then Grover's like, what kind of issues? And he just sort of blows off the question.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very suspicious the way he's acting.
And then once Grover and Annabeth go to fight some guy who's playing his music too loud in the next stall, once Annabeth and Grover are gone, Luke, like, opens up a little bit with Percy. So people are starting to take sides at the camp. And Percy thinks it's weird that the Ares cabin is on Poseidon's side. But keep that in mind for later.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think it's cute how much Percy likes Luke. Like, he's Percy's older brother or something.
Yeah, he looks up to him and it's so sweet.
So then Luke, just adding to the suspicion thing, he makes the comment that Hades must have taken the bolt because he has the helm of darkness, which makes him invisible.
Or else he would have had some other way to turn invisible. Yeah. And then it's like, oh no, I don't mean Annabeth. And it's like, obviously you are, like, hinting towards, like, you're trying to get Percy to suspect Grover and Annabeth.
Yeah. It's such a subtle comment, but at the same time, it's like, there's obviously something wrong.
Yeah.
But that explains why he didn't want Annabeth to be around.
Mm-hmm. So he could sort of, like, sow the seeds of suspicion in the troops.
Yeah. But it kind of leaves Percy with a bad taste in his mouth, but mm-hmm. he doesn't
feel like he doesn't know whether the bad taste is from Luke or from suspecting his friends.
Yeah.
Like, he can't figure out who he should suspect.
So they end their call, and Annabeth and Grover are like, what did Luke have to say? And Percy's like, nothing.
Yeah. And he doesn't want to share his feelings. Share your feelings, people.
Typical. Yeah.
And then after that, they're very hungry, so they go and get some dinner.
Well, they try.
Yeah.
They go to a diner, and the waitress is like, you kids got money to pay for food? And they're like, no.
We're kids.
But, like, honestly, if three dirty, hungry 12-year-olds walked into my restaurant, I'd be like, don't worry about it. Like, you can have this food that somebody didn't eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because sometimes people, like, walk out on their bill or whatever.
Yeah.
Just feed them. Put it on the house. But it doesn't matter anyway, because a motorcycle the size of a baby elephant pulls up to the curb. Which is a strangly shaped motorcycle, if you really think about it.
Yeah. That's a weird way to say the size of a motorcycle.
Because baby elephants aren't long.
No.
They're compact, in a way.
Yeah.
Like, how big of a baby elephant? Now I want to, like, Google baby elephants.
They're just cute. Have you seen the baby elephants giving themselves a bath? Oh, it's just adorable. Or, like, them falling into a bathtub.
I love elephants. Anyway, so the way Rick describes the motorcycle is really gross. And it's like the seat is leather.
Oh my god, but like leather made of human skin?
But I give Rick points for specifying Caucasian skin.
Yes. Ares has a goal. He wants Percy and Annabeth and Grover to do a job for him.
Yep.
In order, and he'll help them out.
Yeah, but Percy just starts getting, like, super angry and resentful, and he doesn't really understand why until he realizes that Ares is Ares, and he has the power to make people feel that way just
the power.
Because of who he is. So Percy's like, ah, but he's still just angry.
Yeah.
He doesn't, I mean, Percy's just angry at the gods in general, I feel like.
Yeah.
He's like, you're straight up using me, and I know it. So Ares wants them to go to a water park and retrieve his shield for him from where he was on a date with his girlfriend. And Percy's like, why can't you do it? And Ares is like, I don't have time, basically.
It's like, obviously you did. You do. You just came out like,
yeah.
and inconvenienced yourself to buy some kids dinner.
He's like, because I don't feel like it. And then he's like, I'm giving you an opportunity to prove yourself. And Percy's like, whatever. But he basically manipulates Percy into saying he'll do the favor by promising that he has information about Sally, R.I.P. Sparkles. So he also reveals that he's the one who suggested to Poseidon that Hades stole the Master Bolt.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's suspicious to me.
I think it's really cool, or well, interesting, and that is a good foreshadowing bit of where he's, right after he said, yeah, I'm the one who told your dad that Hades was the guy who stole it. And right after that, he says, sure, framing someone to start a war. Oldest trick in the book. I recognized it immediately. In a way, you got me to thank for your little quest. And I think that's a good foreshadowing of his just, actions.
Yeah.
Or, but like, I don't know. He knows how to start a war. That's basically one of the only things he knows. I think one of the good things, or big things that we should point out when we're talking about Ares, is that he is not the only Greek god of war.
Oh.
Because of Athena being the goddess of battle planning and strategy. She was also like sort of like the main god that was worshipped by like generals and stuff. So Ares was more just like the god of war in like all of the aggressive actions that war is. So he's more of the impulsive god, which I think he's portrayed very impulsively in Percy Jackson.
Oh yeah, for sure. And Athena, well, I mean, we haven't seen Athena yet, but she's definitely talked about as like a very calm.
I mean, not calm, but like a thinking god.
Right.
Intelligent god. But yeah, so Ares sends him out on this sort of like a side quest. And tells him, you gotta do this or your main quest will fail.
And if you don't, I'll turn you into a rodent and run you over.
So that off they go to
Wattrad.
Or Waterland.
Yeah, it's called Waterland, but a bunch of the letters are out, so it says Wattrad.
Yes, it's fun. I don't know, I like this because the way that they just describe a abandoned water park. I don't know. I've had an abandoned water park near me most of my life.
That's
and
true.
It's a very accurate
2 minutes from here.
Yeah, not even. It's a very accurate description of like, oh, this once was really fun and now it's sad and disappointing.
Yeah.
Every time you look at it, you just get a little sad.
That's true. Except I don't think that this water park has like shops full of stuff.
It does actually. Well, not like, it doesn't have like t-shirts and stuff, but all of the tubes are still there.
Oh.
So if you want to break in, let's go get some tubes.
Didn't you learn anything from like 10th grade? Don't break in the water parks, people. You'll get arrested.
Or if you do break into water parks, don't set off fire extinguishers.
Yeah, that too. Real talk. So Percy does this thing where he asks a lot of questions about Ares and who he's dating and then gets really awkward about it when he finds it out. Because it's revealed that Ares is dating Aphrodite.
Yes.
And Percy's like, but wait, Aphrodite's married to Hephaestus. And Grover and Annabeth are like, so? And Percy gets all awkward and just like,
they're gods. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, they've literally been around for thousands of years.
Yeah.
At this point.
old news.
Yeah. And Annabeth and Grover are just like, yeah, that's how it is. What difference does it make? So I like the names of the rides. I thought
yeah,
funny.
I do too. They're all just like very sassy. Not sassy. But yes, I don't know. Sarcastic? I don't know. There's Ankle Biter Island, Head Over Wedgie, Dude, Where's My Swimsuit, and of course, the one, the only Thrill Ride of Love.
Oh, yeah.
This is not your parents' tunnel of love.
Sounds fun, honestly. It does. But they find a shop full of clean clothes and put them on, which I just think is funny because they, like, Percy puts on surf shoes. I'm like, why would you not keep your regular shoes on? Like, surf shoes do not seem like a good choice.
Did he walk through the bottom of his shoes or what?
Know.
Like, I don't understand what's wrong with his shoes now.
But I just picture them in, like, super bright primary colors, like, slightly oversized t-shirts and stuff.
Well, before they were in super bright primary, or, well, not primary, orange with the Camp Half-Life
shirt. Oh, yeah, that's true.
I don't know, like, oh, just, what color should a like, we're a secret, like, demigods, and, like, they're always hunted by monsters, so we should keep them hidden. What color should the t-shirt be?
On them.
What color should the t-shirt be? Neon orange. Oh, that's a great idea.
So, you know how they're always depicted with, like, the logo and everything, too?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if humans, like, don't see the logo for what it actually is.
What would they see it as? Like, camp?
I don't know. Like, a horse camp.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Can't be a horse crazy.
I never thought of that, though. It's, like, the most conspicuous color you could ever choose.
Maybe they think it's, like, a Latin Latin study camp.
There you go. So they find the thrill ride, Oh Love. And there's the little boat at the bottom with Ares' shield on the seat. And Percy, ever observant, says... He's like, this is way too easy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no way we can just go down to the bottom of this pool, grab that shield, and then get back out.
Yeah. And what do they try and do?
Go down to the bottom of the pool, get the shield, and walk back out.
Because, it's probably just super easy.
Also, like, rereading this now, I realize how often they're just, like, conveniently in watery situations.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of situation can we put Percy in to show off? This situation.
Water park.
Hashtag plot. But it's okay. So, it's kind of funny how Annabeth is like, I'm not going on the thrill ride of love with you. And Percy's like, we're just
cute.
Gotta get the shield. And she's like, oh, it's so embarrassing. What if somebody sees us?
Like, she's thinking, oh, it's so cute.
It's kind of adorable. I put...
Of course, the thrill ride, Oh Love, ends up being a thrill ride of trap.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Thrill ride, Oh Near Death experience. Because they go down and they find the little boat and they grab Ares' shield and Aphrodite's scarf. And when... Percy reaches for the shield, he breaks a tripwire that's really, really, really thin, like a cobweb, so he can't even see it. So then all the Cupid statues along the top of the pool, like, aim their arrows across the pool and shoot silver netting
across.
Net
goes over the thing, and then spiders are released, and it's crazy.
And there's cameras that aim down into the pool, and it's like, live to Olympus in 59 seconds. And then the whole time it's counting down, and it's like, 58, 57. I just imagine,
so
like, a really Hunger Games-esque countdown. It's like, 5, 4, and then the spiders flood the pool.
Annabeth
is paralyzed.
Out.
She literally, like, cannot function. Mm-mm. So Percy is like...
Grover's trying to help, but can't do anything because the net's, like, magic.
Yeah, he's not strong enough to pull it apart. So Percy's like, Grover, go in the control panel and turn on the water.
And it doesn't work.
Surprise.
So Percy uses his inner
god. Water boy powers.
Inner goddess. He uses his inner goddess to channel the water.
Yep. So he basically floods himself and Annabeth out of the pool through the tunnel.
And they still almost die, but they survive.
Thanks to Grover catching them before they fly 100 feet through the air and then onto the concrete. And, yeah. I love Grover. He's always there.
And I love when they like have survived, he turns around and like all the cameras are still pointing at him and he's just like,
are you,
he like gives it,
are you entertained?
Are you not amused? And all now right. We're on to chapter 16. We take a zebra to Vegas. Or is it zebra?
I would say zebra.
Okay, good.
But we are from North America, so can't guarantee anything. And you know, apparently we have some worldwide listeners, according to Spotify.
I don't believe Spotify.
Don't disregard our worldwide audience, Quinn.
They're fake.
So mean. If you're not fake, send us an email and prove Quinn wrong.
If you are fake, send us an email and prove me right.
Either way, send us an email. So yeah, I gave this one 4 stars.
I give it 3.
Really?
Yeah.
A god buying cheeseburgers is more exciting than the image of them riding a zebra to Las Vegas?
Yeah. Because you can't ride a zebra. It's not a thing. They don't let it happen.
That is the one thing
I'm
pointing fingers at.
Sorry, zebra. You can jump onto a zebra, but you can't get off alive. I don't know actually anything about zebras.
Oh, my lord.
I don't know. I just gave it 3. I thought it was boring. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't understand your rating system.
I don't either. Sometimes I just look at it and I'm like, huh. Does it spark joy?
You need to get off Netflix. Anyway, all right. So, the squad goes back to the diner to meet with Ares. And Ares, of course, knew it was a trap, which he only sent them there to get the stuff. Because, A, he wanted it back. B, he wanted to make Hephaestus mad. So, kind of to Ares' credit.
And C, he wanted some leverage on Percy.
Yes, yes, he did. So, he gives them a bag full of clean clothes, $20, and double stuffed Oreos, which is kind of adorable. Like, Percy gets mad at him, and he's like, I don't want your stuff, but if it were me, I'd be like, thank you.
Can I have some granola bars with that, too?
Like, double stuffed, or why double stuffed Oreos? Like, that's not...
I don't know. I would think you would want some, like,
apples,
high fiber things. So
protein bars?
Yeah, because it's like, fills you more. It's like, more
maybe
filling.
Some bottles of water?
Yeah.
Nutrition.
Yeah.
There is no nutrition in double stuffed Oreos.
Come on, Ares.
Give the program. But anyway, Percy asks for what he is owed, having completed the task, which is news about his mother.
And R.I.P. Sparkles is not R.I.P. She's not resting in peace. She is alive.
She is alive. The sparkles are just metamorphosis, not death.
Yeah.
Which is really just confirming what Percy knew all along anyway. But Ares says that Sally is being kept hostage because people take somebody to control somebody else.
Yep. He's surprisingly okay with strategy, considering he's not really good at strategy. Strategy.
Ares?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's got to understand the fundamentals, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
So there is a Kindness Express zoo animal carrying truck, and the squad hops in it, and its name is not accurate whatsoever because it is not kind. There's a lion, an albino lion to be precise,
yes.
A zebra, and an alpaca?
I wanted to say, no, a donkey. An antelope.
Antelope. What? I was closer. But they're being given the wrong food and stuff. And, like, Grover's talking to them, and they give them the right food. So they give the lion the hamburger meat and the zebra and alpaca the turnips. And then they're just riding this truck to Vegas. So the whole time, Percy is, like, he knows that the gods are just toying with him. And they are amused by the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, this sucks. Like, this is not funny. This is literally life or death.
Yes. And life and death situation headed to the underworld.
Yeah.
It's not a fun situation. And they sort of chit-chat about why Annabeth is just so terrified of spiders. And it's, again, to do with her mom.
She's very tied to her mother.
Yes.
Like, unusually so, I
think,
so,
like,
I
all of
like.
Them are. But
her more than anything. Because yeah. I feel like she really wants to impress her, so she wants to be as like Athena as possible, whereas Percy doesn't really care what his father thinks of him.
Right, and he just found out about it 3 weeks ago.
So it's not like he's trying to, I don't know what...
connect with Poseidon now. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas Annabeth, I feel like, has spent her whole life trying to get on Athena's good side.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the Arachne story, Athena turned Arachne into a spider. So now all the spiders take revenge on Athena's children.
Yep.
And then this is a big part, actually.
Yeah, because in the previous chapter, Luke had hinted that Grover had caused Thalia's death. Right. Or Talia's death.
Yeah.
And in this chapter, we get the story of Talia's death. And it's very sad.
It is.
And tragic. But it's like, it's another part of the moment of Percy going, oh yeah, like I assumed that you were the satyr that brought Talia. And they're like, how did you figure it out? It's like, he's not stupid.
Yeah, he's a really smart kid. Stop forgetting
that he's not stupid.
And he just listens to people when they talk. So, Luke and Annabeth had both run away from home, and they had found each other. And then they found Grover with Talia.
So it sort of also explains why Annabeth is so close with Luke.
Right.
And thinks so much of Luke.
Yeah. And so they all made their way back to camp, but right at the last moment, at the top of Half-Blood Hill, the monsters caught up to them, and Talia sacrificed herself so that the others could get to safety, which is honestly sad.
Yes. And then, like, they go into talking about, like, what's on, what the beads on the necklaces, on Annabeth's necklace symbolize, right. And Percy is mostly focused, once again, on Annabeth's father. It's more Annabeth versus her stepmom. Like, that's most of her conflict is with her stepmom.
Right. And we have talked about this in previous episodes, where, like, maybe if they both just tried harder, they could get along. But then we realized that, like, really it's not
Annabeth's responsibility to be the one.
Yeah, it's not. She's 12.
Yeah. And she was 7 when she ran away, which means that it was very bad to make a 7-year-old run away. It has to be something.
Yeah.
And run away as in not just walk down the street and...
take your rollerblades to your neighbor's house and then just come back 2 hours later.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, her father tried again, but, like you said, it's not her responsibility to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Percy, I feel like, doesn't understand because he's like, you have a father.
Yeah.
I don't have, I never had a father. Mm-hmm. And you have a father and a stepmother.
Yeah.
And it's like.
And he never had a father. He had an abusive stepfather. And then he's had a loving mom. But now that mom is in a questionable state of living or dead. Like her life depends on him. And so at the moment he's basically an orphan.
Yeah. Poor guy.
So he can't understand why someone with parents would throw away the chance to be with them.
Right. So Percy has a scary nightmare again. So it starts with him and Talia in straitjackets trying to take a test. And then he falls through the floor into this pit where two voices are discussing how the exchange went well and how they'll use Poseidon's most desperate card against him and all this creepy stuff.
Yep.
And Percy thinks he recognizes the new voice, but he can't quite pinpoint what it is. And then the pit voice is like, wait, he's here.
Percy's because, like, what? Percy, like, crashed someone else's dream.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just... it was some dream inception stuff going on.
Yeah, it's super creepy. So the pit voice shows Percy's mother lying at the foot of a throne made out of human bones with her arms outstretched.
Yeah. Not creepy at all.
Not one bit.
And finally, they arrive in Vegas. That was not their final goal, but they got to Vegas and they have to hide. And it turns out that, Percy can talk to zebras?
Yeah, isn't that funny?
I know.
Because Grover's talking to all the animals and Percy can just hear the zebra and he's like, why can I hear the zebra? And then he's like, I guess it's close enough to a horse.
Yeah, like, he doesn't even question it. He doesn't ask Annabeth, by the way, Annabeth, do you know if, like, Son of Poseidon can, like, talk to horses? And so he just accepts it, like, in his mind, like, oh, I think that zebra is talking to me. Okay. Next.
At this point, everything's just so strange. He's like, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So, I think it's cute that Grover places a satyr sanctuary on the animals so that they'll always find safety. And it's just like, it ensures a happy ending. And it's cute. I like that. You don't have to worry about them.
Mm-hmm. But because they release the animals, they release the animals into Vegas because that's safe. And because of that, they lose their ride and they're stuck in Vegas. And they're still pretty far away from L.A.,
but they do wander around Las Vegas for a while, looking at everything and trying to find, like, some way to, like, get some rest and some food and then get back on the road. So they find the Lotus Hotel and Casino. So the Lotus Casino is actually an incredible place. There's endless video games. Jeez,
I would be happy to spend the rest of my life in Sacramento.
they get a free room and free endless credit cards. Plus, there's an incredible view and skeet shooting off the balcony.
Yeah, and it seems like all their games are, like, there to match the personality. Like, Grover has the people hunting game. Die, you dirty polluters. And Annabeth has this city building. I don't remember what Percy had. I don't think he had a game that really entrapped him specifically, did he?
No, Percy starts playing sharpshooters, but I don't think that's really something that's super...
Yeah.
He's super into. It's just kind of like a thing that's there.
Mm-hmm.
Almost.
Yeah, it's not like it perfectly matches his, like, what he was looking for.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the reasons he's more able to break away.
Right. Whereas Grover and Annabeth are like, this is amazing.
And they literally have to be... Grover literally has to be dragged out of the hotel. Or casino.
Percy is, he notices that the guy he's playing with says groovy, and he's like, what? So he's like, what year is it? And Darren's like, it's 1977, man. And then he goes around, and it's all like, it's 1988, it's 1995, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, all right, we have to get out of there.
Yeah.
So he gets Annabeth. They literally drag Grover out of the casino. Percy finds a newspaper, and it's 5 days later, and they only have one more day to complete the quest.
That's not good.
It's not good. And that is just the nature of the Lotus Casino. You just stay there forever.
Mm-hmm. And they were lucky that they got out at all.
Yeah, because people have been there since 1977.
Yeah.
So creepy.
Mm-hmm. I would be welcome. It would be welcome for in my life. Okay, we're just going to hang out here and have fun. No worries. No. No bills to pay. You give me an amazing, infinite amount of money.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you're feeding me?
But then the world also just passes by without you. Forever. For literally forever. Like, you would never die. You'd live forever. Would you want that?
I would live forever, happy in this little casino, oblivious to the world going by.
I don't know. I think it sounds awful. But I guess if you don't really, like, it's not like they know what's happening.
Yeah.
So I guess it's different. Like, I would hate to live forever and, like, watch the world change around me and everyone I love die and have no idea what was going on. Yes,
that would be horrible. Lotus Casino, not like that. You don't know what's happening.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll give more commercials for Lotus Casino. Hotel and spa. Lotus Casino, Hotel, and Spa. Come and join us.
So, classic Rick ending the chapter on a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
So, now we are on to chapter 17. We shop for waterbeds. I gave it 4 stars because it's so random.
Give it 5 stars because it's so random.
So, I'm in agreement. So, Annabeth has, a fabulous idea. Gets them all in a cab. And she's like, can you drive us to Santa Monica? And the cabbie's like, that's 300 miles away. Do you have money? Which, that I understand.
It's different from feeding some hungry kids. Yeah, like, I think he was smart in doing that.
So she hands him the casino cash card, and he swipes it, and it has, like, an infinity sign next to the dollar sign, which is hilarious.
And then they say, keep the change. Come on. Yeah. No, take it back. Give him a nice tip.
If Percy and Grover kept their cards, then they still have two infinity cards. Oh, that's true. So.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
But either way, no, I would take it back and give him like a $5,000 tip.
I just think it's funny that the cards work outside of the casino.
Yeah.
Because usually in these kinds of things, when you walk out,
it disappears.
It just turns into whatever. Which is not what happens here.
Yep.
Percy tells Annabeth and Grover about his dream.
Yeah.
With the pit voice. And Annabeth is really freaked out, but she won't really say why.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, really?
Because the dream poses more questions to their quest. And it's sort of...
It's scary.
Yeah, it's scary. It's no longer a straightforward Hades has the bowl. It's now like, oh, what if Hades doesn't have the bowl and we're doing this all for nothing?
Right. Which would be not good.
No, but they make a good decision to, like, you know what? Just keep going, doing what we're doing, because what else could we do?
To do? Yeah. For sure. So they reach the Santa Monica Pier, and Percy just walks into the water. And he's fine, of course.
I love how he doesn't say anything to Annabeth. Like, Annabeth's like, what are you doing? And he just keeps walking out. And she's like, where are you going? This is very gross. And he just goes underwater. It's like, no!
I know, she's probably,
he's just being so overdramatic. Like, he could have just been like, hey, I think I need to go underwater. Be back in, let's say, an hour.
Yeah.
And then go. But instead, he's just, like, silently walking out to sea while she's behind him going, Where are you going? Why? No. Come back. Return. We're...
Dirty water. And then he's just gone. And she's like, what? So...
And he rides a shark.
Yeah.
And he finds a giant thing.
He meets a woman riding a stallion-sized seahorse.
And he's all like, lady. Oh, I hardly noticed the stallion-sized seahorse. How do you not notice a seahorse the size of a horse?
And it's kind of silly because it's like, he hardly noticed it, but he noticed it enough to mention it. So it's like, how hardly did you mention it? And did you notice it? But she is the same Nereid that appeared in the Mississippi River, and she serves on Poseidon's court.
Yep.
So basically... They talk, and she's like, this is dangerous. And he's like, yeah. And then she gives Percy 3 pearls to help them survive the underworld. And when Percy gets back up to
the shore, once again reminds him, don't trust the gifts.
Yeah.
And he's all like, but what gifts? And she's just like, see ya, because can't answer a question.
Yeah. So Percy gets back up to the shore, and Annabeth is like, no gift comes without a price. And Percy's like, they were free. And she's like, that's not what I meant. She's like, this is a godly gift. Like, this is not going
to
be free.
Yeah. And then, but they continue on and they're like, now they're heading to DOA in LA.
Yeah. So they continue to West Hollywood and they just wander around for hours looking for DOA records. And it's like,
Google it.
They don't have pocket-sized computers. It's 2004 and they're 12. So...
Go ask information. There's a phone
book. It doesn't appear in the phone book, which I think is hilarious. But they're just, like, walking, and Percy's like, I'm a New Yorker. You're like, I'm used to the cities.
I know. I love this thing. It was... Or that passage where he's just like, New York and L.A. How different. And I think it's just, like, it really shows... I think... Rick is from New York, and I feel like he has some serious hate
for LA. He's like, LA,
he takes
the LA New York rivalry seriously. Yeah. So Percy's a little off his game.
Yeah. And then they do see a news report with Gabe Ugliano talking to Barbara Walters about how horrible Percy is.
Which is so funny.
I just gotta say, Barbara's nice little, like, promo to, like, stay tuned. I wanted to stay tuned.
We are staying
tuned. Who are the other children in this photo? Who is the man with them? Is Percy Jackson a delinquent, a terrorist, or perhaps the brainwashed victim of a frightening new cult? When we come back, we chat with the leading child psychologist. Stay tuned, America. Okay, we're just talking to child psychologists about cults now. I'm in.
That's quality journalism right there. So they're, like, walking past a dark alley, and somebody's like, hey, you! And Percy stops for some reason. Mm-hmm. He grew up in New York, and he still stops.
Yeah.
What the heck, Percy? So, basically, they get surrounded 12. By this kid, this group of kids, and he pulls Riptide and slices one of them.
Just wave it around. You have an immortal... You
can pull it out.
I know. I don't know.
Just
it's not like they had anything that they could steal. Like, okay, take my Oreos.
Yeah.
Like,
they probably spent the $20 already.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, take my backpack and my Oreos. Yeah. See ya, bro.
So then they all run and they end up in Krusty's Waterbed Palace.
Why would you name? No.
It's easy to pronounce,
I guess.
But it sounds gross. So, Krusty is this super creepy bloke, like, straight off the cuff.
Yeah.
And none of this, like, slow burn, like, you might be bad.
No.
Like, with Echidna and the Chimera. No. Like, nope.
Well, I don't know. And when he first shows up, it's sort of like, oh, you're just a weird dude. I didn't think he was just, like...
No, I got, like...
evil right away. I thought, like, oh, this could just be a weird dude.
No.
No, you it didn't get those vibes?
He looked like a raptor, and he had a cold reptilian smile. Like, that's creepy. And he has gray, leathery skin.
Well, if he had friendly eyes.
But he doesn't. He doesn't. They're thick-lidded.
Oh, that's true.
No, immediate no-go vibes. Ugh. So he, like, pushes Annabeth and Grover down onto the mattresses, and he has ropes tie them to the beds. And then he, like, grumbles something about how he can't stand imperfect measurements.
Oh my god. But honestly, so what he wants to do is if you're not, don't fit perfectly to his mattress, he either stretches you so you fit or he chops off parts so you fit. Super gruesome. And then it's just like, ugh, 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 ugh.
Ugh, indeed.
And I'll tell you more about his, like, mythology thing, but really, he's just a true serial killer.
He's gross.
Original serial killer. There's nothing, like, monster. There's no monster DNA in him. He's just serial killer from olden days that somehow is now a monster.
Ugh. But Percy is very smart, and he flatters Procrustes.
Yeah, because his full name is Procrustes, but he goes by Krusty.
Because it's easier to pronounce.
Yeah.
So Percy's like, why don't you show me how awesome this bed is? And then with no qualms, chops his head off.
Yes. But imagine if he had started with the legs and then gone up.
Ew.
I know. It would have been disgusting, and it would be a completely different book. It would have been like a rated R gruesome book.
Yeah.
Like, so, oh, our hero enjoys torturing monsters? Cool.
Yeah, that would not be good. I'm glad that was not a thing. But nonetheless, he does chop off his head.
Yes.
And then he's like, all right, guys, let's go. And Annabeth and Grover are like, what the heck? But luckily, by chance, Krusty has a DOA Recording Studios poster with the address and a map behind the sales desk.
Yeah. And so, I love this poster. So it says, where does it say?
We are always looking for new talent.
Yeah, but it has like a, under bright orange flyer for, under that, a bright orange flyer for DOA Recording Studios offering commissions for Heroes Souls. We are always looking for new talent. So does that mean that they are looking for monsters who are good at killing heroes?
Oh, like a bounty hunting thing?
Yeah.
Probably.
Hmm.
Creepy.
Or it could be like, we want heroes to work for us? As like...
Nah.
I don't know. Guards in the underworld? I don't know.
No, but they don't want living people there.
No.
So I think your first theory, the bounty hunting thing. Seems wrong. Like, they shouldn't be allowed to bounty hunt heroes.
Yeah.
They should just... That seems...
It should be unjust. Like, if they come upon you on accident, then you can kill them.
Yeah. No hunting. So, bum bum bum.
Enter the Underworld. Chapter 18. Annabeth does obedience school.
3 stars.
4. Oh, 4.
Are we ever going to agree on this?
Nope.
Okay. So, basically, they walk from Krusty's waterbed palace, the, like, one block, to an office.
Yes.
And there's a whole bunch of people just, like, loitering in the lobby. And there's one guy at the desk, Mr. Chiron, who is not Mr. Chiron. But I love how he's like, are you dyslexic?
I like he's like immediately suspicious, like, oh, you're dyslexic, aren't you? Like, you're a hero. I shouldn't trust you.
Yeah. But I like how he's like, tell me, mate, do I look like a centaur? And yeah. Percy's like, no. He's so funny. But they have to basically pay him off to take them down into the underworld.
But his description, I love it. All right, so the description of Charon is, he was tall and elegant with chocolate-colored skin and bleached blonde hair, shaved military style. He wore tortoiseshell shades and an Italian silk suit that matched his hair. A black rose was pinned to his lapel under a silver name tag. He just sounds so cool and slick, and he's just like, hello.
I feel like there's 7 different parts of, like, different people combined into one guy. And
yeah.
He's like,
yeah.
He just created Charon. So, also, I love how it literally tells us how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, finally.
It's very helpful.
So, Mr. Charon takes them down the elevator, and it turns into a boat, and they're rowing across the River Styx.
Yes.
He basically dumps them on the opposite shore and is like, Cerberus is hungry. Bye. See ya. And they're like, ugh. So there are 3 lines that spirits have to go through to get to the Asphodel fields, or like the torture land, which I looked and I don't think they actually named it.
I think in the next chapter we'll get more specific stuff, details of this, like the 3 different areas, or 3 or 4 different areas.
We do, you're right.
Underworld, so we can talk about that more in the next episode, but
Asphodel is like never really did anything great, but you never did anything
horrible. Yeah, it's sort of just where you stand there for all eternity, very bored.
Right.
And then there's like the torture area, and then there's the good place area, and then there's the really good place area.
Yeah. So they are like, they're walking toward the metal detectors looking things. And a 3-headed dog, Cerberus, walks toward them. And as he walks toward them, they can see him more. And Percy's like, why is that? And Annabeth's like, I'm afraid it's because we're getting closer to being dead.
Yeah.
It's so scary.
I wonder what the time limit is for them. Like, in the underworld. Like, okay, 3 hours at max.
I don't know. Like, if they stay too long, they'll literally just die and never leave.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I wonder what the time limit is.
That'd be interesting. So they're like, well, like, which one of these lines should we go through? One of them has an attendant on duty, and the other one is marked easy death.
So they decide easy death because all they have to do is get past Cerberus, which is...
He's a big 3-headed dog. Like, picture Harry Potter, but, like, worse.
Bigger and not fluffy.
Yes, and he's a Doberman.
Yes.
With 3 heads.
Yes. But, so, Grover's...
Not a Doberman, a Rottweiler.
A Rottweiler. Grover's chit-chatting with Cerberus, trying to sweet-talk his way through. Cerberus is having none of that. Then Percy tries to get Cerberus to follow the stick, boy. Come on, boy. Follow the stick. Follow the stick. And it doesn't work.
Nope.
But Annabeth, being Annabeth, can rock this dog and takes... A little rubber ball that she randomly has.
Like, why did she keep a red rubber ball the size of a grapefruit from Waterland?
I don't know. That's a very big ball. I'm gonna take this on our bus trip. Or like,
like, maybe she just anticipated. Maybe she knew they were gonna see Cerberus this whole time, and she was like,
she
"This
probably
would be great
did,
for Cerberus,"
because she knew that they were going to the underworld, and they knew that she was gonna have to pass
She is a child of the goddess of strategy.
She was had a plan.
She's SMRT. So she takes out this ball and distracts Cerberus with it.
Yeah, and this is explained because she trained her dog when she was little.
Yeah.
And that's how she knows how to deal with dogs.
But she's getting very emotional.
She was.
Like Cerberus is like whining because he wants to play and she's getting all choked up.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
It makes me wonder what happened to her dog.
Like maybe like, she remembers having to leave him when she was 7. Yeah. And he was like,
don't and maybe go. That's like one of the few letters that she's gotten from her dad saying that your dog died.
Oh.
Oh, God.
That'd be so sad. Either way, don't like it. I love dogs.
Oh my God. It's like they had the like new kid in the, or new kids in the family. What if
maybe they had to get rid of Annabeth's dog? Yeah.
What if the mean stepmother got rid of the dog?
And it's so sad, like the last paragraph of the chapter, it's like, I pretended not to see Annabeth wipe a tear from her cheek as she listened to the mournful keening of Cerberus in the distance, longing for his new friend. Aww.
And what guy. I really thought about was interesting was I think we had a lot of different kind of monsters that we were introduced to in this episode. Like, because so, Procrustes is an evil guy, but I wouldn't consider him a monster. Right. Like, he's more like a sociopathic hero that turned monster. Right. And then Cerberus is considered a monster, but really he's just a big puppy dog.
He's just a good boy doing what he's told to do.
And then on page 298, Percy's, it thinks, even here in the underworld, everybody, even monsters, need a little attention once in a while.
Aww.
And it's just, someone needs to give some Cerberus some cuddles.
Yeah. Poor guy. But they run, after they get Cerberus distracted, they run through the easy pass lane, and the alarms go off with magical items detected, and then boom, end chapter.
Yep.
Classic Rick.
Yep, cliffhanger.
Whew. That was a lot.
Yeah.
A lot happened in that chapter.
We went all the way section. From, where? From Denver to L.A.
Yeah.
In these few chapters. And now it's time
for
Bring on the Monsters.
Yeah.
So, as I said earlier, or just now, actually, that we meet a lot of interesting different kinds of monsters. And the first monsters that we meet are the Lotus Eaters, also known as the proprietors of the Lotus Hotel and Casino. I don't know why I keep calling it a hotel. It's basically just a casino. But the Lotus Eaters are a task, is that the correct term, put before Odysseus in the Odyssey when he was returning from Troy. He gets swept from island to island and he gets like blown away for like 4 days in the wrong direction and lands on the island of the Lotus Eaters.
Mm.
And Odysseus sends out like 2 or 3 crew members to, as like sort of envoys or emissaries to the Lotus Eaters, sort of like, hey, maybe you can give us some food and water and that'd be great and tell us where we are on this map. And it turns out that once you eat the lotus flowers that are given to you by the Lotus Eaters, you no longer want to do anything. Like, you just want to chill out on the island and not do anything, and you forget all your cares and worries and like don't want to go on. So they didn't want to go on with their quest, which was not good. So they ended up having to be dragged back by Odysseus and chained to the oars and starved.
Oh my gosh.
Because if they hadn't, they never would have returned to their duties.
So like they don't even have to eat anything, the squad. They just show up at the casino and it's like, ew.
Yeah, it's like as soon as they took the like credit card, it's like,
that's it. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And then the next monster that we meet is Procrustes. We've talked a bit about him. So basically, as I said, he is not really a monster. He was actually a son of Poseidon. He is Percy's long lost brother. There was no
awful
happy reunion, though. So Procrustes was a robber and a smith, and son of Poseidon. And he lived between basically two big cities on a popular hot highway. And then he would invite people in to his, like, cave for, like, some drinks and stuff. And sometimes he would just grab them on the street and drag them back into his cave. But he would invite the travelers to, like, seek comfort in his little hut and be like, hey, you should sleep on this bed. And when they got in the bed, he would tie them there. And then, like, if you were too tall, he would chop you off. If you were too short, he would stretch you. Either way, he killed you. And he would rob you. Eventually.
Such an elaborate
scheme. Yeah. And it's just a brutal way to die.
Ugh.
No, I don't want to. No. So he was sort of like a big highwayman of days of old, and people didn't like going to the highway. So it got to a point that Theseus came down from one of the cities nearby and killed him in the same way Procrustes killed his victim. So just like the way that Percy killed him. So got him to lay on the bed and chopped him off. Then, fun thing about Procrustes is the reason that we have, I guess there's a term, Procrustean bed or bed of Procrusty.
Really?
I have never heard of that, but it just kept popping up. Dictionary.com was like, you're searching Procrustes? Here's a phrase.
Huh.
But it has become proverbial for arbitrary and perhaps ruthlessly forcing someone or something to fit into an unnatural scheme or pattern.
It's like a square thing in a round hole.
Yeah.
Huh. That's so weird. I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
Learn something new every day.
Uh-huh.
Or every podcast.
And then our last real monster, I guess. I feel bad saying real monster.
Me too.
Because he's just a little good boy.
I mean, some people have three dogs. That's just one dog with three heads.
Yeah. So, as we can you can tell by the one dog, three heads, we're talking about Cerberus. We've talked about Cerberus before. We talked about him with the hellhounds, and we talked about him with Echidna. So just a review. Cerberus is the child of Echidna and Typhon, and he basically
Typhon. If it were Typhoon, it would have an extra O. It's Typhon.
Okay, Typhon. So basically, Cerberus is a super advanced version of the Hellhound.
Like boss level.
I put boss level in the note. His main job is to guide the entrance to the underworld.
He does a great job.
Yeah, he does. He does a good boy. My favorite things when I was looking up Cerberus was that I found out that the Greeks had a deep respect and fear for wild dogs.
Hmm.
As one should.
Yeah.
And Cerberus then was a representation of all the qualities that the Greeks respected and feared, so that, like, he could be terrifying and like, murderous on one end of, like, being, like, if you're trying to sneak into the underworld, he's terrifying. But on the other end, I'm sure he's very loyal and loving, probably. I hope he's loving. He's loyal. Like, he is. To Hades and all things underworldy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not very many monsters this week, I guess.
No. But we'll make up with that with a few gods. So, oh my gods!
Oh my gods!
It's Iris! Iris is the rainbow goddess. We were briefly introduced to sort of the idea of her and her job in these episodes. She was the representation of the rainbow and a messenger of the gods. According to some myths, she had an additional duty of hearing water from the river Styx whenever the gods swore over it. Like, I swear by the river Styx.
Mm.
And then they would have to, like, swear over the water. And then if they were lying, they would be unconscious for a year. And so it was a big sacrifice for the gods if they were lying. But I'm not exactly sure if that's something that happens in the Percy Jackson books, because all that I can tell is that when you swear of this river, Styx, like, thunder goes off, I'm sure there's bad consequences if you lied, but...
That would take a... It might not be relevant at this point.
Yeah. Maybe it's only when the gods do it that Iris comes up, like, here's a bowl of water.
She probably doesn't really care about the Half-Bloods too much. No. She's just like, I guess I'll carry your message. It's like when you have shoddy Wi-Fi and you're trying to make a video chat, and it's like, if it feels like working, it will. Yeah. Otherwise, it's not gonna.
Mm-hmm. Then our main god, the god that we really get to know in these episodes is Ares, the god of war. We've talked a bit about him. So basically he was the son of Zeus and Hera. He was often portrayed in Greek literature as physical and violent and untamed aspect of war in contrast to Athena. Ares played a relatively limited role in the Greek mythology, but his love affairs and children were often referred to. And then also, and when Ares did appear in the myths, he was often humiliated. So most famously when he was caught with his lover, Aphrodite, by her husband, Hephaestus.
Like in this episode.
So, Aphrodite is the goddess of love and beauty, and all we really need to know about her at this point is that she is married to Hephaestus. She does not like the fact that she is married to Hephaestus. They were married sort of in as the point of marry him so that no one else will fight over you. And it's sort of sad.
Poor Aphrodite.
Mm-hmm. And then she and Ares are in a pretty, probably like unhealthy, unstable relationship, but it's long-term on again, off again relationship.
Whenever they get bored.
Yeah. And then the other god that we see, or hear, literally, I think that, my theory is that's his voice going, count down to life in Olympus. One.
Short countdown.
So Hephaestus was the god of the forge, also craftsman and metallurgy and fire and a whole bunch of other stuff. Basically, he's really creative and he's sort of scary. So he was also a son of Zeus and Hera, but unlike Ares, he was not welcomed by his mother. In fact, when he was born, Hera found him so ugly, she just chucked him off the mountain.
Where was Zeus? Was he like, what? What did you do with our son?
Probably. And then Zeus and Hephaestus, or Zeus made Hephaestus and Aphrodite get married. And I don't know. Sad. Neither of them, Hephaestus wasn't all that excited about the marriage either.
I wouldn't think so. He's like, oh, I see how it is.
Yeah. The most famous thing, or the most famous myth concerning all three of these guys is when the sun god Helios saw Ares and Aphrodite together in Hephaestus's bed.
Aw.
Helios told Hephaestus, and Hephaestus made a plan. He was going to make a trap and embarrass his wife and his brother. And in order to do that, he makes a really fine net that's nearly invisible and impossible to break. And the next time Ares and Aphrodite were together in Hephaestus's bed, Hephaestus threw this net on them, and they were trapped, and they were trapped in a compromising embrace.
That's pretty embarrassing.
Yes. And after that, or when he got it, he was all excited. Ha ha, I've caught you in your shame. Ha ha ha. But he was celebrating alone. So he invited all the other Olympians. And none of the goddesses showed up because they were like, this is just gross.
Yeah.
This is horrible.
They probably didn't want to be cursed by Aphrodite to be ugly forever or something.
Yeah. And then, but all the gods, so like Apollo and Zeus, Hermes show up, and they're like,
typical.
And that was extremely embarrassing, and it caused Ares and Aphrodite to run to different parts of Greece for a few hundred years. I don't know. That was a guess on the year length, but
banished themselves.
Yeah, They were so embarrassed. Now the other god creature that we see is the Nereid, which we've already seen, sort of just going into a little further detail. The Nereids are the daughters of the sea god Nereus and Doris. There are different numbers of them according to different myths, but most of the sources that I could find were that there were 50 of them, but one said that there was 100.
Either way, that's a lot of kids.
Yeah, and it's divisible by 50. and the Nereids were shown as young women living in the water. It didn't matter if it was salt or fresh. And they would often help heroes and sailors and just all around good people to meet.
Convenient for Percy Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the last godlike creature that we see, it is Charon the ferryman. He is the son of Erebus and Nyx, and his job was to ferry over the souls of the dead over the rivers Styx and Acheron. In payment, he received the coin that was traditionally left in the mouth of the corpse when the corpse received its burial rites.
I wonder why they did that. Well, I guess just to pay him, huh?
Yeah, pay the toll.
So he was represented as a sullen, bad-tempered old dude, which is not how he's presented in this book.
He's a sullen, bad-tempered, cool dude.
Yeah. Yeah. More interesting, I guess. All right. So lots of gaudy creatures this week. On to
Quest Query.
Yep. I guess this isn't really a question. It's more of a, I guess I wrote it as a question, but it should be a statement. It must be annoying for the half-bloods to be constantly defined by their godly parent when they don't even know their godly parent, most of them.
Yeah, I think it would be. If you didn't know your godly parent, you're still being looked at. Like, people are still looking at you like, I wonder who their parent could be.
Yeah.
And they're never just like, oh, I'm Annabeth. I'm Annabeth, just me. And she's never just judged on her own actions. She's judged on her actions and how it pertains to her mom.
Yeah. That would be really annoying.
Oh, so I was wondering what happened in those summers before Percy and all of his drama shows up. So Annabeth goes and shows him some of the beads on her necklace, and Percy interrupts her to talk about her dad. Come on. Stop getting to know each other. But I was very intrigued on what we did know about the two beads. We heard that one of the beads is a Greek trireme on fire, which is like a Greek boat, like a...
Oh. That sounds like a funeral thing.
Row. Yeah.
Oh.
I wonder if it... Well, no, that was like Viking, isn't it? So
maybe.
But maybe it was just like a terrible accident with the Hephaestus kids. They were trying to make an awesome boat, and they were like, oh, no fire!
Then they tested it on the lava wall or something.
Yeah.
Oh, no. And then the centaur in a prom dress. I can only imagine that they somehow talked Chiron into betting something, and then he lost.
I was actually thinking that there was like a whole bunch of centaur, like a herd of centaurs came through and had a centaur prom.
But aren't usually centaurs like super violent and stuff?
They're rowdy, so I think they would be pretty party animal type thing, and they would be like, centaur prom, what?
That sounds so fun.
And then the Aphrodite cabin getting a hold of like one lady centaur and be like, makeover.
Yeah. Next question. Is the Lotus Casino something that only shows up when you don't know what you're looking for? Or is it just like anybody can wander around?
I don't know. Because it doesn't seem like there's a lot of people in it. And who are in it seem to be pretty young people. Yeah. Like kids. And Vegas isn't really a place for kids.
Yeah, so maybe they trap kids who are just, like, wandering around.
Yeah, and maybe we're just seeing the child-friendly section of The Lotus Casino. So maybe there's a whole different section with adults doing adulty things in the casino.
I don't know. Because what if somebody was like Dionysus?
Yeah.
And just wanted to drink wine all day and play Pinochle.
Yeah.
You never know.
Mm-hmm. What happens in Vegas?
Stays in Vegas.
Forever. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if the Lotus Casino itself only shows itself to people that it deems needs it. But I do think that the games and activities inside do personalize themselves to the person.
For sure. So...
Oh, if this took place in 2019, would DOA records show up in a Google search?
If they could use cell phones?
That's your question. Okay.
Do you think that they have, like,
half-blood I think that comes Google? Back to the question I did last episode for the music and magic. How does it mix? So I think it depends on whether DOA Records actually sells records or creates music.
Do you think they do?
Maybe that's where all the music comes from.
Charon's just sitting somewhere with a piano and a computer making the music. He's secretly invested in the elevator music. That's hilarious. This whole time, like, the whole time they're wandering around Vegas, I was thinking, this would be so much easier if they just had a smartphone and Google.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
Unfortunate. Okay, so do you guys have any other quest queries? If you do, email us, message us, get a hold of us, yell really loud. We probably won't hear you if you yell really loud, but we'll, I don't know, maybe
a hair. Iris message us.
Iris message us. Yeah, do it. Try it.
For real, though, send us your stories, comments, quests, queries, answers to our questions at floor600.podcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at floor_600 and Tumblr at floor600podcast. We spy you, hunt over 100 Instagram followers.
Yeah, we saw it. We appreciated it.
It's fun. I like seeing your guys' posts.
Yeah. Now I'm tired. I'm going to take a nap.
All right. Bye.
Bye.